way to the top job in the United States. It's a disgrace for the country. It's a threat to the world. And it is emboldening and enlivening fascists and racists all over the world. So when Donald comes to the United Kingdom, I expect the whole of the European alt-right to turn out to counter any demonstrations we must put out. That's how dangerous this man is in the world.
I'm afraid we'll have to end on that powerful note, Lee. Thank you to both my guests and to you. Don't forget to leave your comments and your thoughts. I've been Camilla Shambiati.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Israeli settlers are committing violent daily attacks against Palestinians harvesting their olive trees for the season. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Zina Al-Tahan, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Settler Attacks Wreak Havoc on Palestinians During Olive Harvest. Stay tuned for more. Israeli settlers are committing violent daily attacks against Palestinians harvesting their olive trees for the season. The attacks, which include beatings of farmers and destruction of trees, preceded the formal start of the olive harvest season on October 12th in the occupied West Bank, but intensified in the number over the past week. The most targeted areas have been in the northern occupied West Bank, around villages south of Nablus City and south it, according to local observers. Ghassan Douglas, who monitors settler violence in northern West Bank, told Al Jazeera they recorded 58 attacks since the start of the season, including 9 on the village of Burin, south of Nablus alone. It is evident that there is an increase in the attacks. We are 30% into the olive harvest season, and we have already had 58 attacks in north of the West Bank, said Douglas, describing the attacks as planned and not spontaneous. Harvesting olive trees is a key economic, familial, and social activity for many Palestinians, who take days off work to tend to their lands or those of their relatives, neighbors, or friends. Between 80,000 to 100,000 families rely on olives and olive oil as primary or secondary sources of income. While settler attacks are a frequent, near daily reality for Palestinian villages, the number and intensity of attacks increase during the olive harvest season, which runs until November, as settlers target families working on their lands. On October 12th, settlers uprooted 900 olive and apricot saplings and stole olive crops in the village of Sebastia, north of Nablus. A further 70 olive trees were destroyed in Masafer Yatta, south of Al-Khalil. In Avarta, east of Nablus, settlers chopped down dozens of olive trees on October 13th and sprayed them with chemicals. They also destroyed some 70 olive fruit and vegetable trees in Al-Tawani, south of Al-Khalil, and slashed tires and vandalized cars and walls in the village of Marda near Salfit. On October 14th, settlers cut down more than 80 olive trees in the village of Al-Mughayr, north of Ramallah. The next day, they attacked the Hamoudi family in the village of Yusuf near Safit with rocks, injuring 4. The family and other residents were attacked again on October 16th. Settlers also beat residents of Burin near Nablus that day with batons and set olive groves ablaze, injuring at least 12 Palestinians. Douglas said while in previous years the attacks would begin a week after the start of the olive harvest, this year the attacks began early, which forced Palestinians to tend to their trees quicker than expected. Since the end of August 2021, settlers have injured at least 22 Palestinians and ruined at least 1,800 Palestinian-owned trees, including 900 trees in Sebastia and 650 in Jama'a, in Nablus, and Al-Tayyib in Al-Khalil. Douglas pointed out that, in addition to the burning and cutting down of trees, the attacks included stealing olive crops, chasing down farmers and pushing them off their lands, as well as threatening them and drowning parts of their land with the sewage water. Douglas said, "The settlers and the army are chasing us down over our livelihoods, our income, our bread, our sustenance." Palestinians say Israeli settlers very often come with army protection and are many times armed, which rights groups have documented. At times, the settlers and the army work together. The strategic building of the settlements on hilltops in the West Bank makes it easy for settlers to descend onto the Palestinian villages and their lands below. Additionally, settlers enjoy what the United Nations has called institutional and systematic impunity, which allows them to continue committing attacks. The UN described the attacks as being ideologically motivated and primarily designed to take over land, but also to intimidate and terrorize Palestinians. According to to the latest updates by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, UNOCHA, settlers carried out 20 attacks between September 21st and October 4th, a noticeable increase with the start of the olive harvest. Between September 7th and 20th, there were 11 attacks, while 6 were recorded between August 24th and September 6th. The largest recent attack came on September 28. A large group of masked settlers descended on to the South Al-Khalil village of Al-Mufagra and attacked residents with stones, injuring 29 Palestinians, including a 3-year-old boy who suffered fractures to his skull and was hospitalized. Settlers also damaged 10 homes, 14 vehicles, several solar panels and water tanks, and killed 5 sheep, according to OCHA. In a statement on October 12th, the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, said its data showed that over a period of 1 year, in August 2021, more than 9,300 trees were destroyed in the West Bank and called for the protection of Palestinian farmers. The ICRC also said it has observed a seasonal peak in violence by Israeli settlers residing in certain settlements and outposts in the West Bank towards Palestinian farmers and their property in the period leading up to the olive harvest season, as well as during the harvest season itself. Until October 4th, OCHA recorded a total of 365 attacks this year, including 101 attacks that resulted in Palestinian casualties and 264 that resulted in property damage. The numbers have already surpassed last year's, which ended with a total of 355 attacks, including 274 on property and 84 casualties. Douglas attributed the rise in settler attacks to the ongoing expansion of the Zionist regime's illegal settlements in the West Bank and encroachment onto Palestinian villages. He said, for example, in the past, the settlement of Yitzhar, south of Nablus, was facing the village of Burin. Now the settlement has expanded over to the nearby villages of Madama, Orif, Inbas, and Hawara. Similarly, the settlement of Itmar once stood opposite to the village of Awarta, south of Nablus, while now it has extended to Beit Forik and Agraba, he said. In the past, we would focus on the villages near the settlements, but now the entire West Bank is near settlements, said Douglas, explaining the more the settlements grow, the more lands come under threat. He said while he sees a persistence by the Palestinian people to confront the army and settlers and remain on their lands, the settler attacks are a form of pressure. Douglas said the settlers are only growing in numbers and this terrorism is only growing. The people will explode one day and the world will bear responsibility. If the Palestinian people lose hope, they will rise up and there is not one power in the world that will be able to deter them.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Abdul Bari Atwan, a well-known author, has described the recent highlights in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon as an American Zionist conspiracy to ignite a civil war in the region. Atwan stated that the U.S. Zionist conspiracy to create a sectarian conflict in the region will fail. He said, sectarian conflicts have been created with the aim of securing Israel's interests and stealing Lebanese gas. But this sedition will not go ahead, and if it goes on, the U.S. and its allies will surely be defeated. In fact, the axis of resistance in the region has so far managed to oppose Western, namely United States and Israel, interests in the region and foiled their plots. Members of the axis of resistance include Iran, Syria, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to name a few. The U.S. has attempted to weaken the resistance axis by hatching different plots, such as causing instability and wars in the region for years. However, the resistance has always been ready to properly respond to these threats. For instance, Washington has always sought to keep Israel's enemies at one another's throat so that they could not give Israel trouble. But the resistance front has time and again proven that it will not allow the Tel Aviv regime to commit crimes with impunity, as it has launched retaliatory attacks against Tel Aviv, which have exposed the vulnerability of the regime's entities in the region. Israel's constant violations of Lebanese airspace are also a source of instability. This has been seen as a constant provocation by Israel, mainly directed at the resistance movement Hezbollah. Meanwhile, the U.S. has also been accused of creating an atmosphere of instability. On the one hand, it has imposed sanctions on Lebanon, which prevents foreign investment in the country. It has even opposed the delivery of fuel shipments from Iran, is in an emergency mode due to a lack of fuel. Meanwhile, the U.S. ambassador has stirred controversy by making anti-Hezbollah statements, so much so that a judge ordered a media ban on her. The trip by the number three diplomat at the State Department, Victoria Nuland, to Lebanon, also proved to be controversial. Her purpose was to meet government officials and representatives to discuss Lebanon's reforms and elections. The question that arises is, what does she have to do with Lebanon's elections? Nuland was famously accused of promoting regime change in Ukraine, backing the Maidan protesters and opposition, which showed how the Ukrainian opposition is being manipulated by Washington. Coincidentally, while she was there, the deadly protest in Lebanon erupted, which resulted in the death of several Lebanese. What is for certain is that the popularity of the resistance in the region will be a severe challenge for the enemies, who are hatching plots against them, specifically Israel and the U.S. The face-off between the Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro and the opposition led by Juan Guaido has put Caracas in a years-long political impasse and economic crisis. Several rounds of talks in recent years have been futile, and the two sides have failed to reach a consensus. In August, the Venezuelan government and the opposition began a new round of negotiations in Mexico City aimed at overcoming Venezuela's political and economic crisis. The dialogue was mediated by Norway. However, the latest developments have hampered the process of a possible settlement. Venezuela's government has decided to suspend the talks after Cape Verde extradited a Venezuelan envoy named Alex Saab to the United States on money laundering charges on Saturday. Saab was arrested in Cape Verde under a U.S. arrest warrant in June 2020 when his plane stopped there to refuel. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro lashed out at the U.S. for what he called kidnapping of an envoy to face an American court.
Saab was taken yesterday, skirting over everything. A plane arrived, assassins, hitmen came down. They sought him out and they removed him with blows from the jail he was held. They took him without advising lawyers, the family, nobody. A kidnapping by the United States government of an international diplomat.
Jorge Rodriguez, who heads the government's negotiating team, described the government's decision as a deep expression of protest over the brutal aggression against Alex Saab. He also called on Washington to release Saab immediately.
Venezuela is alerting the world that the life of Alex Saab is in danger. It's in the hands of judicial system that is directed at harming Venezuela. And we demand his immediate release by the American government.
The U.S. charged Saab in 2019 in connection with a bribery scheme and sanctioned him for allegedly orchestrating a corruption network that allowed Caracas to profit from a state-run food subsidy program. However, Saab's lawyers have denied the U.S. charges as politically motivated.
This is absolutely a political attack on Venezuela, and it is a kidnapping. This shows just how far in lawlessness the United States is willing to go and how much they are determined to attack Venezuela.
Meanwhile, U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido reacted to the decision to suspend the talks, accusing the government of evading the nation's problems. Caracas aims to ease U.S.-led sanctions on the Venezuelan nation, while the opposition says it aims to use the talks to secure guarantees for regional elections to be held in the fall. Venezuela descended into political turmoil after U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido unilaterally declared himself as the interim president in January 2019. He claimed that Maduro's re-election in 2018 was fraudulent. Then, the United States refrained from recognizing Nicolas Maduro's re-election in 2018, imposed sanctions on the crisis-hit economy of the Latin American nation, and froze millions of dollars of Venezuelan money in the U.S. bank account. Washington has been using sanctions as leverage to overthrow the legitimate government of Maduro in what has been termed economic terrorism. Venezuela has faced chronic shortages of food and medicine as a result of U.S. sanctions, resulting in years of political and economic crisis.
Well, this is exactly what the U.S. government wants to prevent. And this may be also an effort on their part to sabotage even the negotiations going on in Mexico. That how can the talks continue under in this situation? But what needs to be condemned and denounced is depriving any country of food and medicine, particularly in this time of pandemic.
While freezing assets and slapping illegal sanctions on countries that refuse to submit to Washington's hegemonic policies is nothing new, the U.S. sanctions have directly targeted Venezuelan people. Experts say the sanctions, used as a tool for regime change, have no effect on the stability of Maduro administration, but further complicate the socioeconomic condition of ordinary people amidst a full-blown crisis. Seven people were killed and 60 others injured after a peaceful protest in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, turned deadly on Thursday. It all began as heavy gunfire erupted during a rally of Hezbollah and ML movement supporters to protest against a judge probing the last year's Beirut port explosion, as they accuse him of political bias and being swayed by the U.S. Hezbollah Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah has accused Judge Tariq Bitar of politically targeting officials in his investigation. The Beirut port blast in August 2020 killed over 200 people, injured around 6,000, and left some 300,000 homeless. It also caused further damage to Lebanon's already fragile economy. Following the unrest, Hezbollah and the ML movement in a joint statement said the attack was aimed at creating civil strife. Hezbollah initially blamed the attack on the Christian Lebanese Forces Party, led by Samir Jaja. Later, reports from Lebanon's Interior Ministry confirmed that the far-right Lebanese Forces Party had started the Thursday shooting in Beirut. Hezbollah accused the Lebanese Forces Political Party of taking orders from the United States and being financed by some Arab countries. The Lebanese president vowed to hold accountable the perpetrators.
What happened will be the subject of security and judicial follow-up, and I, for my part, will ensure that the investigation reaches the truth of what happened in order to hold those responsible and instigators to account.
Aoun described the incident as painful and unacceptable. So far, Lebanese authorities have arrested 19 people in connection with the violence.
Well, there are the uproar and instability and confusion in the region are directly attributable to the United States, to the apartheid entity of Israel, and to the repressive and repulsive monarchy of Saudi Arabia. So the whole issue is basically outsiders doing their best to destabilize the region.
Israel has once again taken advantage of civilian aircraft covers to conduct airstrikes on Syria, a potentially dangerous move that could have resulted in an enormous tragedy. Israeli warplanes carried out strikes on the Palmyra area in the eastern countryside of Syria's Homs province. A Syrian soldier was killed and three others wounded in the attack.
They can commit crimes with impunity and feel that they have enough political cover because of their influence on the governments of the world, and which consequently influence the United Nations. They're backed by the United States, and their influence over the U.S. government and U.S. foreign policy is tremendous. They have more influence over U.S. foreign policy than U.S. citizens do.
A top Russian commander said in a statement that Syria decided not to use its air defense system to counter the Israeli attack, as two passenger airliners were flying in the area at the time. Israel has repeatedly used civilian aircraft as a shield against Syrian air defense systems in its aggression against the Arab country. In February 2020, an Airbus A320 with 172 passengers on board was forced to make an emergency landing at the Russian-operated Hamamim Air Base during an Israeli attack. Back in 2018, Israel had to apologize for using a Russian reconnaissance aircraft as a shield during an attack, causing a Syrian S-200 surface-to-air missile to shoot down the Russian aircraft instead and kill 15 Russian and two Syrian service members. Iran's ambassador to the Vienna-based international organizations has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for its lenient approach toward Israel's nuclear program. Kazem Gharibabadi said silence and negligence toward the issue send negative signals to the members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. He expressed regret that the agency considers being outside the treaty as being exempt from any commitment and criticisms. He was responding to comments IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi made in an interview. When asked about the agency's focus on Iran's nuclear program and silence about that of Israel, Grossi argued that Tehran is a member of the NPT and must subject its nuclear sites to inspections and verifications, while the Israeli regime hasn't even signed the treaty.
You know, the UN does not condemn Israel because Israel has been very effective with their foreign policy and their intelligence operations, infiltrating every other government on the planet. It's because of this that Israel can influence these governments to not take action against them, either directly or via the United Nations. And that's why Israel gets away with this with no consequences.
Israel, which pursues a policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear weapons, is estimated to have hundreds of nuclear warheads in its arsenal. The regime has refused to allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the NPT. The Israeli regime, which is West Asia's only possessor of nuclear arms, has so far assassinated 7 Iranian nuclear scientists. But Iran's calls on the international community to hold the regime responsible for its crimes have fallen on deaf ears. Iran says the silence will embolden the regime to expand its aggressive measures. On October 19, 2014, Press TV lost one of its hardest-working correspondents, Serena Shim. She did her final report on heavy clashes in the Syrian city of Kobani between Daesh terrorists and local Kurds. Serena and her camerawoman were returning to their hotel when a truck crashed into their car. The camerawoman sustained severe injuries but survived the incident. Luck, however, wasn't on Serena's side. Accounts of Serena's death, who was transferred to a different hospital, vary. Early reports suggested that she had lost her life at the scene of the crash. This is why later accounts said that she had passed away due to heart failure after being transferred to the hospital nearly 30 minutes later. Turkish authorities blamed the incident on the camera woman who had been behind the wheel at the time of the incident. There were no follow-up investigations by authorities in Ankara. Serena's death came only 2 days after she told Press TV that Turkish intelligence had accused her of espionage for the country's opposition parties.
I'm very surprised at this accusation. I've even thought of actually approaching Turkish intelligence, and because I have nothing to hide and I've never done anything aside from my job, and I'd like to make that apparent to them.
Serena's colleagues say she had told them a day before her death that she had with her documents that would implicate Turkey's role in the rise of Daesh and other terrorists in Syria.
Serena herself gave us a heads up just less than 24 hours before she was apparently killed on the road back home when she was leaving the area where she was reporting at and coming back to her family and to her children, while having with her evidence that implicates international agencies like the WHO for aiding and abetting terrorist organizations that were wreaking havoc inside of Syria, apparently with the help of certain Turkish factions or certain Turkish security authorities. We still don't know the entire truth.
7 years following her unfortunate death, no further information has been released regarding the fatal accident. Serena started working for Press TV in 2007. She did reports in different countries, including Lebanon, Iraq, Ukraine, and Turkey.
Serena Shim, Press TV, Donetsk, Eastern Ukraine. Serena Shim, Press TV, Tripoli. Serena Shim, Press TV, Istanbul.
She was a U.S. citizen of Lebanese origin. The U.S. State Department, however, rejected her family's call to probe her death, saying it, quote, does not conduct investigations into deaths overseas. 2 days before her fatal accident, Serena had said on live TV that she had been targeted for her investigative reports regarding Ankara's direct support for terrorist groups whose evidence had been largely concealed at the time.
I am a bit frightened about what they might use against me. We were some of the first people on the ground, if not the first people, to get that story of those Tafiri militants going in through the Turkish border from the Beb el-Hawa Rihanli border, being sent in. I got images of them in World Food Organization trucks. It was very apparent that they were Tafiri militants by their beards and by the clothes that they wore, and they were going in there with NGO trucks.
Syria has been gripped by foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. The Syrian government says the U.S. and its allies are aiding Takfiri terrorist groups that are wreaking havoc in the Arab country.
Syria 2010 has nothing to do with Syria 2011 that saw a war waged by the international community with the help of Turkey and with the lead of the United States of America. It's not that we should hold them responsible. They are the reason for the havoc that was wreaked inside of Syria. They are the reason and the main instigators and founding fathers of ISIS and Daesh and Al-Qaeda, which we never knew in our regions before the U.S. occupation landed in our region.
7 years on, questions into the circumstances of Serena's death remain unanswered. Her mother said in an interview that Serena paid the price of telling the truth. The 29-year-old mother of two was laid to rest in a cemetery near the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Press TV remembers her as a brave correspondent with an unwavering dedication to her career.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
tourism. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the 13th episode of our series, Health Tourism. In this episode, we are going to introduce you to Bahman Hospital, one of the leading hospitals in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Stay with us, please. Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, has been carrying this title for more than 200 years. Agha Muhammad Khan Qajar, the founder of the Qajar dynasty, made Tehran the capital of Iran in 1786. Tehran is not only the seat of government and administration of the country, but it is also the commercial, business, and manufacturing heart of the Islamic Republic. Over years, it has become an advanced, modern, and beautiful metropolis where, in addition to historical and old places, many modern and contemporary tourist attractions abound. Tourists, both domestic but foreign, visit Tehran in large numbers. One of these attractions is the Nature Bridge. Nature Bridge is a three-story structure that is 300 meters long and is built at the height of 40 meters. This bridge, which is only used by pedestrians, is located in Tehran's Abbasabad district and towers over the Modarres Highway. The Nature Bridge connects two famous parks of the city, that is Taleghani Park and Water and Fire Park. The special lighting and unique features of this bridge attract many visitors and tourists. There are also a number of cafes and restaurants on the bridge that tourists can visit to relax and eat. Nature Bridge is the first pedestrianized or non-vehicle bridge in the country and the largest non-vehicle bridge in West Asia region. Tehran, as the beating heart of the country, has attracted the attention of many foreign tourists. And as far as attracting health tourists is concerned, it is ranked number one among Iranian cities. In fact, Tehran is definitely the first choice for health tourists visiting the country. It is worth mentioning that, according to Travel Risk Map 2019, Iran is on par with countries such as the UK, Canada, Sweden, and Denmark in terms of international security. The Travel Risk Map has been prepared by the SOS International Institute for Global Risk, which measures the level of risk in each country and region around the world based on the existing threats to travelers in terms of violence and political insecurity. Threats such as terrorism, war, social unrest, and crime. In defining this travel risk map, factors such as the stability of transportation infrastructure, the level of industrial relations, the effectiveness of security and emergency services, and the country's sensitivity to natural disasters have all been taken into consideration. Therefore, traveling to Iran is safe. The hospitality of the Iranian people, coupled with the natural beauty of the country, often turn it into a memorable experience for tourists who visit Persia. Eco-tourists and health tourists make up a sizable percentage of travelers who visit this country. In the remainder of this program, we will introduce you to one of the most prestigious and prominent hospitals in Tehran, Bahman Hospital, and we will become more familiar with its history, facilities, and equipment, and the wide range of medical services that it offers to foreign patients. Bahman Hospital is located in West Tehran in Iran Zamin Street. The construction of this hospital was completed in 2006 and it became operational a year later. Bahman Hospital is one of the most beautiful hospitals in Tehran in terms of interior architecture and building construction, which has been built on an 18,000 square meter plot of land. This 200-bed hospital has four floors consisting of different medical wards and an administrative ground floor and two basement floors. Bahman Hospital is a private and general hospital, and in this short period of 14 years, it has successfully established itself as one of the most modern, trusted, and state-of-the-art treatment centers in this northwestern region of Tehran. Certainly, the hospital has been able to receive a certificate of accreditation from Iran's Ministry of Health. Bahman Hospital is also very active in the field of women and children's health and has received the title of the top hospital in promoting natural childbirth and is also known as a child-friendly hospital. The medical facilities of Bahman Hospital include a clinic, paraclinic, inpatient ward, intensive care unit, ultra-modern specialty surgery room, pharmacy, etc. Each of these departments provide a range of services to patients with the best facilities and equipment. For example, the hospital's cardiac intensive care unit has two CCU wards and two post-CCU wards, with a total of 25 active beds, ready to serve patients with heart problems or those who have been transferred to the hospital in emergency. Patients who have had angiography or angioplasty are also referred to this ward. This ward is equipped with a special monitoring system, each of which is connected to a central monitor, and patients admitted to the CCU are constantly observed through a monitor. The surgical ward of the hospital includes a general surgery room and a heart surgery room. The general surgery room of the hospital has 8 active operating rooms with advanced and up-to-date equipment, and the largest and most complex surgeries in the field of general surgery, gynecology, orthopedics, ear, nose, and throat, neurology, laparoscopy, and plastic surgery are all performed there. Bahman Hospital cardiac operating room in an area of about 400 square meters has 4 active operating rooms, and the best equipment has provided the possibility of performing various types of cardiovascular surgery by top surgeons and specialists in the field. Bahman Hospital also operates internationally and has received its IPD or International Patient Department license from the Ministry of Iran's Health Ministry and provides the best medical services to these patients. Patients from many Asian and European countries come to this hospital for treatment. The International Patient Reception Ward is located on the ground floor of the hospital, and patients can go to this ward after entering the hospital and take the necessary measures to admit their patients. Dear listeners, that was the 13th episode of our series, Health Tourism. Until our next program, goodbye and God bless.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Winter is coming, and from the looks of things, it will be a long, harsh, and very cold one. But at the same time, the world is in the midst of an unprecedented energy crisis, with dire economic, social, and political ramifications. Brent crude has surged to a five-year high of over $80 per barrel, while gas prices are up over 500% year on year. The International Energy Agency says the global energy crunch is expected to boost oil demand by about 500,000 barrels a day. Analysts say the energy crisis is rooted in soaring demand as the economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic takes hold, and the production level has simply failed to keep up with demand. However, some immediate measures could easily resolve this crisis. One such fix would be the removal of US sanctions on Iran, which enjoys one of the largest hydrocarbon reserves in the world. The flow of Iranian oil into the global market, for example, would be vital in easing the crisis.
Until a couple of months ago, it was not very important for the world that Iran is under sanctions because supply exceeded demand. But the current trends in the global market may put pressure on consumer countries, Europeans and countries like India and China or U.S. allies to push Washington to lift sanctions.
Iran has repeatedly underlined its ability to swiftly increase its crude production to help alleviate the global shortage. Its oil minister recently said people in the United States and some European countries are paying the price for their leaders' unwise policies. Javad Oji stressed that Iran, on several occasions, displayed its goodwill to help stabilize the oil market and resolve the global energy crisis. But U.S. sanctions are standing in the way. People in Lebanon, who have been facing gasoline and diesel shortages and electricity blackouts, bear witness that ways are found where there is mutual will. Iran has recently been delivering shipments of fuel to energy-starved Lebanon, despite U.S. sanctions targeting both countries. That was achieved through the determination of both Iran and the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Iran had also earlier dispatched fuel shipments all the way to Venezuela. Now, as millions of people around the globe are bracing for a hard and long winter, it's worthwhile to ask how much of the ordeal could be averted through a similar international resolve.
Fear is growing in Indian-controlled Kashmir following a series of shooting incidents across the region that killed around a dozen civilians, including four non-local workers. The fear doubled among the non-local residents after police said non-locals should reach army camps and police stations. Dhananjit Kumar has been working in Kashmir for the last 12 years. Each year he stays here for 6 months and returns home with his hard-earned money. But this year, he's moving ahead of time.
My family back home is worried. They insisted upon my return. I have worked for so many years here, but I have never seen such chaos. The situation here has never been right, but we were never involved. This time, it's different.
Dhananjit Kumar and many like him are on the move, while many others have sought police protection till they manage a way out. Following the deadly October violence in Kashmir that resulted in more than 33 killings, which included 9 Indian Army personnel, 11 civilians and 13 pro-freedom fighters in different incidents, the administration issued an alert across the war-weary Indian-administered Kashmir. Intelligence reports warn of attacks on power projects, emergency landing strips and other government infrastructure. New Delhi has installed additional security forces across Kashmir after intelligence reports warned of more attacks.
We are doing our best to neutralize the terrorists who are behind the civilian killings. We have killed around 11 terrorists in October till now, and we'll do our best to ensure the safety and security of our people. It's not a security lapse. The targets were soft, and now we beefed up and more vigilant.
After India stripped Kashmir's autonomous status in August 2019, people of the region were promised development, prosperity and greater opportunities. However, media reports suggest the situation in the region has slipped from bad to worse due to the absence of local political activities and implementation of rules and laws without taking people of Kashmir on board. Kashmir is a dispute between India and Pakistan since the partition of Indian subcontinent in 1947. The two have fought wars over the territory and claim the region in full but rule it in parts. The fresh spate of violence in Indian-administered Kashmir is seen by many as a politically motivated action. People of Kashmir urge the world community to help resolve this geopolitical dispute between India and Pakistan before they engage in war and devastate the leftover life. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
On Tuesday, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen greeted Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki at the beginning of a five-hour debate in the European Parliament. The niceties didn't last long.
Don't try to divert. That's the debate right now here about the rule of law and the primacy of European law. Don't try to run away and to escape that debate.
Morawiecki insists Poland's constitution has primacy over EU law, and this is infuriating the bloc's establishment. Amongst other things, EU authorities are worried the Polish government is trampling on fundamental rights, judicial independence and freedom of the press. Morawiecki insists hypocrisy is at play when rule of law is debated.
Some member states maintain tax havens. It means that in the EU, the richest member states are making even more money. How is this part of our EU values?
Criticism towards Morawiecki kept on coming, however.
For years, you have been infecting the minds of Polish people with lies and manipulation about European rules and regulations.
The Polish Prime Minister raised a myriad of issues, ranging from the EU's energy crisis to the refugee situation, but the focus repeatedly came back to him. Analysts say the EU is in no position to preach about rule of law in the light of its treatment of minority groups in the bloc, such as refugees. The problem has become worse due to recent developments in Afghanistan.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
Inside the chamber, Morawiecki was criticised over his country's treatment of refugees, but he certainly was not without his supporters. Lawmakers want the European Commission to withhold billions of euro in funding to Poland, but that could be a lengthy process. When the Commission initiates proceedings against a member state, it normally takes many years before there is a conclusion to the case. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Thousands of Muslims marched through major streets of Suleja to mark the birthday anniversary of Prophet Muhammad. For members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, the celebration has been going on for a week because it was designated as the Unity Week by the late founder of the Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini.
We all believe that the Prophet is our Prophet, one Prophet, no any other Prophet apart from him. And he unites, he brought the Quran through Archangel Jibril, and he is the one that show us the path, the direction, and way to follow. The whole people in this town are now out to celebrate the birthday without any of us thinking that he will be paid.
Members of the Islamic movement said Muslims must unite to defeat the seeds of discord planted by enemies of Islam in the name of Shia-Sunni sectarian divide. They condemned the various terror attacks resulting in the killing of Muslims in Afghanistan and in Nigeria, which they said may not be unconnected with global arrogance to plunge the Muslim communities into chaos in order to steal resources. These incidents, the Islamic movement said, is the result of disunity. So Muslims around the world must unite. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria recall that their leader, Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki, has always emphasized that unity among Muslims is about understanding each other and working together for the benefit of the larger Islamic Ummah. They say that although this is an auspicious occasion, it is important to recall the 2015 Zaria massacre, where more than 347 of their members were killed. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
With a few days to go to the 4th Mustafa Prize, the laureates of the Science and Technology Award are gearing up to nab the prize. The 5 winners were announced on October 12th in a press conference held in the headquarters of the Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation. They're now in Iran, visiting different scientific entities, including Iran's High Council for Cultural Revolution. They're here to talk about their scientific achievements and the significance of the international prize.
I'm extremely happy to be selected for this prestigious Mustafa Prize. It's a big honor and a great privilege to see that our collective effort with international collaboration, Atlas, Antares, and KM3Net recognized with this prestigious prize. And I would thank a lot and all my gratitude to the Mustafa Foundation for this noble and for this exemplary manner they are doing their work to promote scientific excellence in the Muslim world.
First launched in 2015, the Mustafa Prize honors scientific breakthroughs in the Muslim world. It is awarded to Muslim scientists in 4 categories of information and communication science and technology, life and medical science and technology, nanoscience and nanotechnology, and all areas of science and technology. This year, out of 515 works submitted to the Iran-based secretariat, 5 nominees were selected as winners. Laureates will be granted cash prizes amounting to $1 million.
In the last 4 decades, we have been working in the field of natural parachemistry, and that has resulted in the discovery of many drugs.
That's why you are going to receive the award.
Yeah, I feel extremely honored to receive this very prestigious award. This award is already very well known globally because of its excellence, and the quality of assessment to select people is absolutely wonderful.
The scientific event is held biannually during the Islamic Unity Week, which celebrates the birthday of Prophet Muhammad. This year, the award ceremony falls on October 21st in Tehran, with the attendance of 50 scientists and scholars from 15 countries. The Mustafa Prize says after 4 rounds, it has achieved its primary goal, to motivate Muslim scientists to compete for excellence. But the prize eyes for a bigger goal. It says it seeks to elevate science and technology in Muslim countries to, quote, revive the Islamic golden age in science. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A televised speech, Hezbollah Secretary General accused the Lebanese Forces Party and its leader directly of conspiring to initiate a civil war.
I need to tell you very clearly, the real project for the Lebanese Forces Party is instigating a civil war, because a civil war will lead to demographic changes that would put the Christians in one area to create a Christian canton controlled by the Lebanese Forces Party. There would be no place for anyone else in this area. This is our understanding of our experience with the Lebanese Forces Party and the path it is taking. One example is that they were ready to give the service of starting a civil war on behalf of the former Saudi ambassador Sabhan.
The leader of the resistance said the Lebanese Forces Party is trying to incite Lebanese Christians against Hezbollah, presenting it as an enemy. Said Nasrallah gave a detailed explanation of last Thursday's events, stressing that the security apparatus gave Hezbollah a confirmation that the first bullets were fired by militiamen from the Lebanese forces against the unarmed protesters. This, he says, was all part of a plot to drag Hezbollah specifically to internal conflict orchestrated by foreign sides. Nasrallah said the U.S. is also trying to provoke an internal conflict in Lebanon the same way.